We just have this week and then one final week remaining in our Daring Faith series. And in these last two messages, kind of what you heard reflected in this past song, we're going to talk about something that I think is really some of the most difficult elements of what it means for us to be people of faith. One of the most difficult elements for us to be people who are seeking to faithfully live out our calling as Christians. And so this week, we're going to be talking about what it looks like for us to be daring to wait. How it looks for us in our faith to live out a faith that is daring to wait at certain points. And then next week, we're going to be talking about what it means for us to dare to step out and to go in faith. And this is kind of, you know, a place that our series has been building to as we look at this idea of what it means for us to live with a sense of daring faith. And I say that these are oftentimes among the most difficult choices for us to make in our faith, because lots of times we're deciding exactly between this option of, is this a time where we would dare to step out in faith and to move? Or is this a time where we kind of step back and we're waiting for God to make it clear to us? As we seek to live faithfully to God, we find ourselves asking that kind of question a lot. As we try to discern what's the right next step for us. What does God want me to do in this situation? Does God want me to kind of push it and have that conversation with my spouse or with my child at this point? Or is God calling me to kind of wait and be patient to let things play out? We oftentimes find ourselves in those kinds of positions. And so this week we're going to be focusing in on daring to wait. And even if this isn't an issue, this idea of waiting, even if it wasn't an issue with our faith, waiting in general is just something that we struggle with as people. The idea of practicing patience, the idea of being able and being willing to wait is just something that is typically pretty difficult for us. I think we see this a lot if we look just at our cell phones. You know, there was a time not long ago when all a phone could do was call someone. When you could pick up a phone and you could remember almost all of the phone numbers that you needed to know because there weren't many of them, and you could make a phone call. And that was it. That was all our phones were able to do. And then as time has progressed, what's taken place is that the people who have designed and developed and continue to advance the technology of phones, they've created these devices that we are kind of dependent on in so many ways. We're dependent on our phones because now, you know, I don't know many people who still carry maps in their car or atlases in their car, but our phones are our GPS now. Our phones tell us how to get around. Our phones are our date book. They've replaced that in our lives. Our phones tell us what the weather's going to be. Our phones are where we get our news updates. Our phone is where we're able to get our emails and do work. Our phone is something that is intimately connected to so many areas of our lives. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, but it's just the way that life has advanced and life has progressed and the way that phone companies and the communications companies have operated, they've kind of created these devices that we're dependent upon to feel normal in life. And then the battery dies. And if you've been in that position where you know, you're doing something really, really important, you're, you know, checking your fantasy football roster or you're uploading a picture of a dog on Facebook or something like that, and you have this moment where your phone dies and the screen goes black, and you are so annoyed at the inconvenience of that moment. You think, when will Elon Musk be able to create some kind of a phone that doesn't need a charging battery? And you get up and you go and you plug your phone in and then if you're in the middle of something, and I know I've certainly been guilty of this, you plug your phone in and you hit the power button, even though you know it's going to wait to turn on until it's ready to turn on. And you sit there and you wait, and it's, I don't know, 60 seconds, 90 seconds. It feels like an eternity when we're in this moment of waiting for our phone to be able to turn back on so that we can keep uploading the picture of our new dog. And it seems like in those moments, we're just captive to this idea of our phone. I know it happens to some people, you know, when you're traveling in an area that's remote or rural, and you're going through a section where you don't have any kind of cell phone coverage, and you could be driving for an hour and a half and not need your phone for anything. And then once you realize that you don't have cell phone coverage, you keep incessantly checking your phone to see when you have signal again. You check it because you don't know. Is someone trying to get in touch with me? Am I missing out on some kind of hot news? Am I going to need to call someone else? There's this process where when we're missing out on our phones, it's like we can't wait to get back into a place where we have that kind of cell phone coverage. We become captive to these little devices, and the waiting, it feels like it's impossible for us to be able to overcome that. And this drive with our phones, again, it's not something that's limited to our phones. It's the way our world is kind of structured, where we don't have to wait to get much. We don't have to wait to find out information. We don't have to wait to be able to contact someone. And again, all of those are advancements that have made life easier and better in lots of ways. And there's nothing inherently bad in that. But there's a reality that part of life for us means that there are certain things that we just have to wait for. And because so much of our lives are geared around making things happen more quickly and more efficiently and more conveniently for us, when we get into one of those seasons of life or one of those situations in life when there is no quick or easy answer, we really struggle with the idea of being people who are faithful in waiting. That struggle extends far beyond our phone usage. It's this incredible emphasis in our world on convenience and immediate gratification. And this level of disdain, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon when we have to wait. But we need to become people who are able to wait, because there are seasons of waiting an expectation for all of us. And sometimes those seasons are good things. Sometimes we find ourselves in seasons where we're anticipating something that will happen in the future. You know, in 2 weeks, we're going to start this season of Advent. And the season of Advent is a time when we literally, the church calendar is structured around taking time to celebrate in anticipation the birth and the coming of Christ, and to celebrate in hope the return of Christ. There's this season that's set up where we wait with anticipation for that moment when we celebrate the birth of Christ. There are all kinds of seasons that are set up like this. You know, for all students, whether you're just starting school and there are kids down in Kingdom Kids, or whether you're in college, you know, something generally happens around May. For students, when the weather gets nice outside, when you can feel that warmth, it's like you know that the end of the school year is approaching, and there's an anticipation of completing the work that's in front of you and of being able to enjoy the time that you have over the summer to rest and relax or do whatever you want to do. Do something different than be in class all day. It's this season of good anticipation, but it's not always easy in that time of waiting. For those of you who have been married and have been engaged, and maybe some of you were engaged for a long time, you know, when you are in that moment of being engaged, that season of being engaged, there's this time that takes place where it isn't always easy. You know, you're juggling a lot of details. You're planning a wedding. Lots of times at least one person is moving, or both people are moving. You're starting new jobs. You're kind of in this season of upheaval in life, but there's this anticipation that what's going to happen is good in the future, and so you're excited about that change to take place. Becca and I are in that season now that lots of you have been in this room, where as we're in this season of anticipating another baby joining our family, where we're excited for what that is going to hold. And it's a lot easier for me to wait and to just be excited. I'm literally not bearing the weight of this season. But that joke could get me in a lot of trouble. I meant like the whole process. It's getting warm in here. There's this idea that in this season where we anticipate childbirth, where it's not easy Much of it is not easy in the process, but at the end, there's this beautiful child that you're celebrating. Lots of seasons of anticipation and waiting, even though they're not easy in the time, they're leading to something good. But there are other seasons of waiting that we find ourselves in as well. There are seasons of waiting where it's much less certain if what we'll experience at the end is positive or negative. You know, lots of us have been in that position, or we've had a close family member who went into a doctor's appointment and they heard that there was something abnormal or something that didn't look right, and they were calling for further tests, and it just felt like those 10 days or 2 weeks or however long the process takes, it just feels like those minutes are creeping by while you're uncertain about what the news is that you'll hear at the end of that. You know, there are seasons that many of us have been in where either your work goes through a difficult process, or you go through a season where you leave one job and you don't know what's next, or a season where you're just kind of in transition and you don't know how everything is going to work out. And there's this real kind of anxiety that can settle in those moments as we worry and we wait to see how things will shake out for us. Sometimes waiting comes with anticipation, and sometimes waiting comes with a pretty high level of concern for us. And the reality at the end of the day is that waiting is difficult. Waiting is something that's hard. When we're in a season of waiting for something good, it can be difficult. When we're in a season of waiting for something that could be bad, it can feel just excruciating as we're waiting for the process to complete. And in those seasons of waiting and uncertainty, we struggle lots of times. We struggle to know what to do or how to handle situations. And the reality is this, that Scripture is filled with people that had both seasons of waiting in expectation and seasons of waiting in uncertainty of whether the situation would be positive or negative at the end of it. If we think about Mary and Martha, there's the well-known story of Mary and Martha that as their brother was struggling and dying, as Lazarus was dying, they were sending for Jesus and asking Jesus to come for help. And then they're in this season of difficult waiting where they don't know what's going to happen. But it sure seems like at the end of it, it's going to be bad if Jesus doesn't show up. And then their brother does die. And when Jesus comes, eventually Jesus raises him from the dead. But that season of waiting is a struggle for them. If we think about a character like Joseph in Scripture, about the person of Joseph, Joseph endured so much throughout his life and struggled so much through years of circumstances and situations that were much less than ideal, seasons of waiting for him to experience what it was that God had laid out for him to do. If we think about someone like King David, again, David endured years of hardship between the time that he was anointed as the next king and when he would be actually crowned king over God's people. And in that time, his life was in danger. He was cast out oftentimes. He was in hiding. It was a difficult life that he lived in waiting as he was trying to discern what the next step was and waiting for God to direct his path and make it clear. And as we begin to look at Scripture, I want to draw a distinction here that waiting in faith is not just the title of this message to make it sound like a Christian version of waiting. That there's a difference between just waiting and waiting in faith. You know, if we don't know something and we just decide not to be concerned about it, not to be engaged with it, to just kind of let it pass by, or to just wait and kind of be laissez-faire for something to come to us, that's kind of just regular waiting. That's like when you go to the doctor's office and you get checked in and they say you can have a seat in the waiting room until the doctor's ready to see you, and you can kind of choose. Am I going to sit there? Probably you're going to play on your phone unless it's dead and you're going crazy, and then you're going to risk looking through the germy magazines that are in the doctor's office. You know, there's waiting like that where there's no expectation. There's nothing it's building to. We're just kind of waiting. And then there's waiting in faith, where we're actively looking for the direction that God's leading us in. where we're actively pursuing God in the path that he has for us, but it might mean that we don't know where that direction's leading us to yet. It might mean that we're not sure how it's all going to work out, but we're dependent and we're waiting and we're persevering on the plan that he has for our life. And so today, we're going to look at some of these examples in a story of what it looks like to be waiting in faith. And as we do that, we're going to look at the life of Abraham. And so the life of Abraham is a prominent piece of the book of Genesis. From chapters 11 to chapters 25, you see Abraham as kind of one of the main centerpieces of the book of Genesis as a patriarch of our faith. And while we don't have time to look into all of those stories and to really read much even about Abraham's life, this morning we want us to focus in on Abraham and to look at him as a person that God had called to a mission, and that it took years for that mission to be accomplished, and yet Abraham waited faithfully and struggled at points to wait faithfully to the place that God had called him to. So we're going to start reading in Genesis chapter 12, and we're going to look at verses 1 to 3. And it says this: "The Lord had said to Abram," who would later be Abraham, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." And in the next verse, in verse 4 there, it reveals that at this point in time, when God really calls Abraham, he makes this promise to Abraham that Abraham was 75 years old. And so at 75 years old, God makes a promise to kind of do something new, really, in Abraham's life. He promises that he's going to make Abraham into a great nation, that he's going to bless the world through the scope of this great nation. And there's a problem with that, of course, and it's that Abraham at 75, at this point in his life, he has no heir to follow him or to come after him. So the idea of God creating a nation through him and blessing the rest of the world through him is something that would seem pretty unlikely at that point in time. And then in chapter 15, which we know from some dates in chapter 16 is about 10 years later, Abraham is explicitly promised in that point that God is going to give him a son that is going to be part of this process of making him into a great nation, and that his descendants will be as numerous as the stars in the sky. So Abraham waits. He's in this season. At this point, he's already in this season for 10 years of waiting on the promise of God to be made into a nation, and that it's going to come through this child of promise for Abraham and Sarah. Then again, in Genesis chapter 17, we see that at this point, Abraham is 99 years old when God promises once again that him and Sarah will have a son. So at this point, Abraham has been waiting 24 years since this calling and this promise has been made that there's going to be a great nation birthed through him. And in a bold move, when God declares this to Abraham, Abraham laughs at the news that God has told him. If you can imagine that, Abraham kind of laughs in the face of God and says, how funny would that be if him at 100 years old and his wife Sarah at 90, if she delivered a son that would become this child of promise. And then, just a few chapters later, the next year, in Genesis chapter 21, we see that exact process take place as Sarah gives birth to Isaac. In Genesis 12, at age 75, God promises to make Abraham into a great nation. And even though all throughout the process, when we see Abraham and Sarah struggle to wait in faith through those 25 years, God still has them wait in this process before he delivers on the promise, before he has their son born who will turn into a great nation. And so it's normal when we hear a story like this to ask this question: why would God make them wait 25 years? And if God was going to make them wait 25 years, Why would he tell them until that last time when he says it's going to happen next year? What is the reason that God has that Abraham and Sarah should wait 25 years to have this promise fulfilled by God? And at the end of the day, when we look at stories like this, we walk away considering, why does God have us enter into seasons of waiting in life? Our belief in God is that we worship a God who is all-powerful, a God who's all-knowing, a God who's all-capable to do anything at any moment in time, and yet he has us enter into these seasons of waiting at points, and these seasons that are difficult for us to wait through. And while it would be impossible for us to work through this room and to determine for each of us what the situation is and what the reason is why God would have us wait at a certain time, it all kind of boils down to the truth and to the reality that God has a plan and a will for our lives and our world that is bigger than fulfilling every whim and desire that we have. That at times God enters us into seasons of waiting and allows us to enter into places of waiting because he has a purpose for us in those times to learn lessons that we wouldn't learn otherwise. Because he's lining things up for us to experience that we wouldn't experience otherwise. And so when we're in seasons of waiting, and these are seasons that we will all enter, that I know some of us are in right now as we sit here today, I want us to think about three things that we should remember to consider when we're in seasons of waiting. And the first is this, that waiting in faith reveals God's power. When we're in a season of waiting, it's often because it's our only option left, right? You know, when we get to that point where we're saying, God, we're waiting for you to direct our next steps, it's typically because we have tried everything in our power and in accordance with God's leading to fix whatever situation is in front of us, to deal with whatever problem is in front of us. And at some point, we realize we don't have the ability, we don't have the capability to do everything. And in those moments, we will oftentimes recognize the power of God. And we see that in the story of Abraham. So when Abraham and Sarah receive this word that they're going to have a son from God, they struggle to wait in faith. They struggle to wait patiently for God to do that. And as a result, they make some poor choices along the way. At one point when Sarah says to Abraham, there's no way this is going to happen with you and I, so I want you to conceive a son through one of my servants. They go that route and they try to kind of solve the problem on their own. They try to sort of circumvent the situation that's taking place and find a solution. And God says, hey, this child will be kind of part of that Abrahamic legacy, but this is not the child of promise. The child of promise is going to come between you and Sarah. But they struggled with that notion. The fact that Abraham laughs at this unlikely nature of their plan working out, it reveals that they struggled at this reality that God was going to make that happen. And so what we know, what we see, when Abraham laughs, we know this, that when God first said it, Abraham really believed that he was going to handle that situation on his own. At 75, Abraham thought he could still be the one who's responsible for conceiving a son between him and Sarah. At 75, he thought, you know, maybe this is still a possibility. And so he's trying to accomplish this work on his own instead of waiting for God's timing to take place. And in that, what we see is that Abraham has to wait. And we don't know if this is the only reason why Abraham has to wait until he's 100. But when Abraham has Isaac, when Abraham and Sarah have Isaac, they know this is a work of God in their lives. This isn't an accident. This isn't a work of their own doing. It reveals the power of God to them. And this is similar to a passage in 1 Corinthians in chapter 12, in verse 9. And in that section in chapter 12, Paul is talking about this thorn that he's been given in his flesh. And he says that he's asked God to take away this thorn in his flesh. And he's waited for this thorn to be taken away from him. And it says that when he asked God, verse 9 reveals God's response to him. It says, but he said to me, and God speaking, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And Paul says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. When we're in seasons of waiting, we have the opportunity to see the power of God at work, because oftentimes we can't handle those situations on our own. The second piece is this, is that waiting in faith strengthens our character. To look to Paul's writing again, in Romans chapter 5, Paul is talking about how in light of the incredible work that Christ has done on our behalf, we have this ability to boast in the hope of the glory of God. And then he also says this in Romans chapter 5, beginning in verse 3. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. Perseverance means that we remain committed to something even if we don't see it happening right in front of us. Perseverance means that we're willing to wait and not, again, not to wait passively, but to be patient and diligent and faithful in seeing a plan come together. And this is really at the heart of what it means for us to be people who are waiting in faith to see God at work. In this passage, Paul says that perseverance, this idea of waiting for God, develops character in our lives. And we see that because as we persevere in faith, in those seasons when God does not immediately answer our prayers and our requests, or God doesn't immediately make our future path clear, we develop character in regards to our ability to demonstrate patience. We develop character in regards to our ability to demonstrate trust. That regardless of the circumstances we see around us, that we have a God who's powerful and who's in control and who has a plan for us. And oftentimes, in seasons of waiting, we're tempted to do this. Almost like Paul says, he was tempted to do at the start. We're tempted to go to God over and over and over again and say, God, can you just do this now? God, when are you going to do this? God, how is this going to look when you take care of this situation? But sometimes, instead of doing that over and over and over again, we need to be asking the question, God, what is it that you want to refine and shape in my character? God, what is it that you want me to learn as I'm going through this season? God, what is it that I need to take away from this circumstance? And what is it that you're trying to teach me? Waiting in faith is something that strengthens our character and our trust. And then finally, the third piece is this, is that waiting in faith deepens our intimacy and relationship with God. When people have an encounter like Abraham and Sarah, where they need to wait on something, and they come to the end of that season of waiting, they walk out in the end with a deeper relationship with God. We see this in Sarah after the birth of Isaac. So throughout the story of Abraham and Sarah waiting for these 25 years, there's this scene that takes place in Genesis chapter 18. And in that chapter, God visits Abraham, and God is again affirming to Abraham that they will have a son and that these nations are going to be established through his son. And it says that Sarah is, she's able to overhear the conversation that's taking place, and she laughs at the plans of God as well, because it seems so unlikely that this is going to be the case. And Sarah struggles in that season leading up to the birth of Isaac. And then we read this in Genesis chapter 21, verses 6 and 7. It says, Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. When all is said and done, Sarah laughs again, but this time she laughs in a different kind of way. Instead of laughing at God, at the plans that he said to her that she needs to wait on, she laughs out of this sense of joy at what God has done in her life. She laughs out of this sense of almost the lightness and the recognition that it's clear with what's taken place, that God is the one who has been at work in her life. And Sarah's sense of laughter, and no doubt her sense of joy at the end of 25 years, it shows the way that she's developed in her faith and in her intimacy and in her relationship with God. It shows that at the end of this difficult experience and in this season of waiting, that at the end, it all kind of became clear what God was doing throughout that process. And in the same way, kind of, that oftentimes in life, when we'll go through a difficult experience with another person, whether that's a spouse or a friend or a parent or a stranger even, if we go through a difficult experience with another person, oftentimes when you come out at the end of that experience, you feel this deeper sense of connection with that person. You feel this deeper sense of relatability to this other person because you've had some kind of a shared, powerful experience. And the same thing that happens to us with other people is something that happens in our relationship with God as well. When we're people who are willing to wait in faith and we see God deliver on those promises, it's something that develops us and deepens our intimacy in our relationship with God. Seasons of waiting are hard. And when we find ourselves in one of those seasons, we need to step back and we need to recognize that waiting in faith reveals God's power, that waiting in faith strengthens our character, and that waiting in faith deepens our intimacy and our relationship with God. And this morning, as we close, we're going to do something that's a little bit different for us. And as I referenced earlier, waiting in faith is not an invitation to just sit back in inactivity. Waiting in faith is something that as we wait for God, we need to be engaged in prayer, in His Word, in fellowship and worship and connection with other believers. And this morning, we're going to do a responsive reading together and pray through God's Word together. And we're going to look at Psalm 130. And in this short psalm, it's 7 verses long, we're going to reflect on what it means for us to be people who wait in faith and in expectancy for God to act. And so what we'll do is you can either follow along in your bulletin handout there where it lays out the leader role, and I'll read that, and then we'll all read the everyone role together, or you can read on the screen. Well, let's read Psalm 130. Out of the depths I cry to you, Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can with reverence serve you. I wait for the Lord. My whole being waits, and in his word I put my hope. I wait for the Lord more than the watchmen wait for the morning. More than the watchmen wait for the morning. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption. He himself will redeem Israel from all their sins.